Good morning. One more time before the summer schedule begins, I come to you on this Pentecost Sunday from the Pastor's Study, and it is good to be with you. What do you know about the God who made you, who loves you, and who gave everything for you? What do you want to tell the neighbors about how amazing it is to walk in that light and how it allows you to see the world and all the people of the world through eyes of love and care and mercy? What do you want to say in words and in the way you live and the things you do and the decisions that you make? It has been hard to look at the burning neighborhoods, including civic structures of stability and places where people have invested their whole lives into making a livelihood for themselves while serving their community. And then to look at the images of fire in Acts chapter 2, the red and the yellow and the orange of Pentecost Sunday, in the same way. It's even harder to hear the words, "I can't breathe." And not for the first time from a black man under the heel of white men armed with weapons and authority, as onlookers cry mercy on the man's behalf, as those men's demeanors appear unmoved by the life being crushed away in a moment that has become agonizingly familiar. It's hard to see and hear the footage of yet another human being saying, "I can't breathe," and then return to contemplating the ruach, the spirit, the wind, the breath of God, who moves over the waters and breathes life into dry bones and empowers the church to speak. I've had the privilege of knowing police officers in a number of different places. They have been people I loved and respected. I would trust my life, and I would be willing without hesitation to entrust the lives and safety of my African-American friends, as I would my own family, to every single one of those officers I've had the privilege of knowing or being acquainted with. Even the guy who pulled me over when I was in college, he was not pleasant, but he let me go because he saw the Indiana University sticker on my car, and he said, "It's going to hurt enough when Purdue beats you all today." I believe his language may have been a bit more colorful than that. By the way, our basketball team destroyed Purdue that afternoon. Anyway, I can laugh about this unpleasant encounter now and tell it almost wistfully as a funny little kind of long-ago anecdote on the breathtaking back roads of Indiana that have assumed an almost mystical status in my imagination. When I was a teenager, I used to indulge what I didn't have any clue at the time was a deep introversion. I didn't know anything about introversion, extroversion. And I would go for long walks at night all over my hometown, well after dark. I loved those walks. They were spiritual and enriching, and there was just something about being out at night, in the darkness. And I had no clue. It literally never occurred to me what a privilege it was that I could do that without ever being questioned or harassed or threatened by authority or by anybody else for that matter. My parents didn't have to have the fraught worry when I went out of the house, didn't ever have to have the talk with me. And I say that reflecting on my total naivety, both as a male and as a white guy, just blissfully clueless. As a teenager, on Saturdays or during the summer, I'd ride my bike through the economically disadvantaged parts of town on the other side of the railroad track. And I would ride through the country club neighborhood not too far from where I lived. I was a stranger in both of those worlds. But I never realized what a privilege that was. A few years ago, the Montreat Conference Center had a great event featuring some prominent African-American speakers and had quite appropriately made arrangements to have security on hand, given the appalling number of incidents that have taken place. Incidents is an inadequate word for atrocities. Shortly before the event, I saw some officers outside the auditorium, and I knew that a number had volunteered their time and their expertise to be there, and as every officer does every day, by putting on the uniform and going to work, they had opened themselves up to personal risk. Personal risk on my behalf. So I went over just to say a word of thanks to them for being there, and the officer closest to me said, and I'm quoting, "It's an honor for us to be here today. We asked to be here." And the other two who were there came over when they overheard that and joined in saying the exact same thing. And I know they meant it because nobody's that good of an actor. And all of these officers were pretty much exactly the same shade of white that I am. "I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even upon my slaves, both men and women, in those days I will pour out my spirit, and they shall prophesy." What do you know about the God who made you, who loves you, and who gave everything for you? What would you like to tell the neighbors about how amazing it is to walk in that light and how it allows you to see the world and all its people through the eyes of love and care and mercy? What do you want to say in words and in the way you live and the things you do and the decisions you make? As my junior high science teacher explained patiently to the unrelentingly baffled look on my face, fire is not a gas or a liquid or a solid. Those are all matter. Fire is energy. There is a terrifying energy that draws us like moths. It pulls us in and repels us in sometimes equal measure. Sometimes the equilibrium gets stretched out of shape and we get pulled in a little closer to a divine fire. But it's almost like we sense that if we get too close, who knows what might happen? Sometimes we're moths. Sometimes we're Icarus, who, according to Greek mythology, fashioned wings out of feathers and wax and flew close enough to the sun that the wax melted and he fell into the sea. We want to fly so high, but we want to do it relying on our own ingenuity and our own industriousness. Meanwhile, God has offered us the highest heights. But most of the time, we don't even know how to accept the invitation. Barely even know how to hear the invitation, let alone accept it. In Acts 2, the fire comes to the disciples without them asking for it. It doesn't land on them to burn them. It's so gentle. It's only, as Luke writes in Acts, it's only tongues as of flame or tongues as of fire. But make no mistake, in it is all the energy of the universe, all the creative, restorative, powerful, massive energy of God. The Spirit gave the disciples voices they didn't have before, specifically so that they could and would spread the good news, and so that as they proclaim and embody God's love to numbers of people who would go out or go home to share God's love to numbers of other people, that divine love, which is grace and peace, mercy and justice, loyalty and mutual accountability, forgiveness and abundant generosity, would surround and envelop the whole world of humankind, the whole world of the cosmos. We are not going to be able to worship the way we are used to worshiping for some time yet. We will get there again, but we're not rushing there. Happily, we are a Pentecost church. God gives us new languages to speak with in order to proclaim the good news to our neighbors and to the world, and with a little help from above, maybe even back to ourselves in a way that we'll finally hear the message we ourselves are so accustomed to saying. What do you want to tell the world about the God who made and loves and gave everything for you and me and them. And how do you want to do that?